91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today it's a topic most every adult grumbles about, a good night's sleep. We'll speak with sleep therapist Dr. W. Chris Winter. He counters some of the traditional methods for good slumber in his book, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Then while Linda Gastenheimer is away, a segment for Public Radio Junkies. We feature freelance theme music composer B.J. Lederman, the most famous non-speaking public radio figure. He produced the theme music for Morning Edition and Weekend Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Stump the Chump from the memorable Car Talk program. We bet you can hum a few bars of each of his selections. We head next for news, then return with Topical Currents. It's Topical Currents, Thursday edition, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Most people are amazed by those who easily slip into blissful sleep. They slumber uninterrupted through the night and awaken with a bright, cheerful disposition.
Have I ever said, please? Most of us real people toss and turn, worry about a friend's strange remark, think about taxes, mother-in-laws, kids with poor grades and lousy attitudes, and why the washer doesn't work. We're jealous.
With us now is sleep expert and therapist, Dr. W. Chris Winter. He's written the book, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. Dr. Winter joins us now by Skype from Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome to you, doctor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That introduction covered it all, didn't it?
Especially the kids with lousy attitudes.
Yeah, in school. This is a tough time as school starts to wrap up. It's a real gauntlet to get your kids successfully completed and moving on. So, yeah.
Right. Well, welcome, doctor. I just want to get this straight from the beginning because I think that we have a lot of misconceptions about this. What does it mean to get enough sleep? What does it mean not to? And doesn't it vary depending on what's written into our DNA, our sleep needs?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of bad information and sort of cross signals out there. I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, for instance, yesterday I saw I saw a young woman who was coming to me because she couldn't sleep. And it generally took her until about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to fall asleep. And it was interesting, but she was accompanied by her mother. This is a very successful woman. She is she just finished her third year at Auburn University. She's got a very prestigious internship in New York City this summer. So to look at her, she looks a little bit better than somebody who's not sleeping. I remember residency very well and all the surgeons who were running around without sleeping and taking people's spleens out in the middle of the night on, 30 minutes of sleep here and there. And what was interesting was at some point I turned to this young woman's mother. I said, "Do you think this woman's sleeping? And do you think your daughter's sleeping?" And she looked at me and she said, "She is sleeping all the effing time."
Oh, my.
So it's very interesting because if that young woman had come to my office by herself, we would have gone down the pathway of, geez, what can we do to get this, 21-year-old woman to sleep? Because she's not. And boy, if you don't sleep, that's an emergency, isn't it? And I think that's exactly the pathway that Michael Jackson took. He went to his doctor and said, "Look, I don't sleep." And so fast forward to the end when somebody's giving him propofol via a surgeon coming to his house every night, and you have a real tragedy. So I think helping people understand what their problem is and understanding that nobody out there is not sleeping. Certainly there are people who are not sleeping well. But really the people we have to worry about not sleeping are the people who are, because of their livelihoods or because of their jobs, are not really given the opportunity to sleep. That's a lot more of a dire situation when somebody's working two jobs and doesn't really have the hours to commit to lying down and sleeping. We need to worry a lot more about those people than the people like this young woman who say, "Look, I'm up till 4 o'clock in the morning every night." Perception of sleep and reality of sleep are really two different things.
Doctor, in a recent article I read, I think it was in the New Yorker, but it said that from a human evolution standpoint, we may well not have slept 8 straight hours but in 3 or 4 hour stretches, that it was better for survival in the savannah to break up sleep. Is there anything to that?
It probably is. I mean, Roger Erich is a professor at Virginia Tech who wrote a very interesting book, like at day's close or at something like that. I can't remember exactly the title, but it was really a unbelievably well-researched kind of historical novel. He wasn't a sleep doctor. He was more of an historian, but he kind of looked back and kind of showed through all these passages and literary works that, you know, we really didn't sleep for a consecutive period of time like you're describing, that sleep was sort of broken up into first sleep and second sleep. You kind of go to bed when the sun went down, because if you didn't have enough whale fat to fuel your oil lamp, you know, there's really no reason to stay up and sit there in the dark. So people fell asleep, but then they would wake up in the middle of the night and socialize with one another and then go back to bed for second sleep. So I think when you look at that, when you look at certain cultures, the way they nap halfway through the day and the way our sleep kind of works, it's not a huge stretch for me to think that maybe we were meant to be sort of biphasic sleepers. But I think that sometimes when people say, well, maybe we were supposed to sleep for an hour, be awake for two, sleep for an hour, awake for two, I don't think you can sort of stretch it that far. So to me, if somebody's sleeping 8 hours a night and feels great, I don't think that's a problem. But to me, a lot of times people say, well, you know, I go to bed and I wake up and use the bathroom. It takes me an hour to get back to sleep. My first thought is, great. So what? You know, just read a book. Like, is that a problem? You know, if somebody says, well, no, I get up and read a little bit and go back to sleep and feel great the next day. If you don't care, I don't care, basically.
I want to go back to the 21-year-old junior at Auburn for a second. And
sure.
Talk about these misperceptions that we have about how much we sleep. Are there scientific reasons for why people think they haven't slept when they actually have? Or is this all psychological? Because I know of people just like this, and they don't look like they haven't slept. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so I would say, yes, there are both psychological and scientific. I would almost not distinguish the two, meaning that there's a reason why she's not here coming up from Auburn, driving all the way to Charlottesville, Virginia to lie to me. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so
they believe it.
So right. And that's one of the things I stress in my book, is that my job is not to tell you you're wrong. My job is to help you understand that you're wrong, but use that as a springboard for helping you to get to a place where your brain perceives sleep. And we've all had it. I mean, the example I give in the book is, when I was a kid on Christmas Eve, you know, I was 8 years old and they'd stick me in bed. My parents would stick me in bed and say, now listen, Chris, you better fall asleep or Santa Claus won't come. And then they'd say, good night, and they'd leave. And I remember sitting there listening to the Jay Giles Band on my little clock radio thinking, oh, my God, if I don't fall asleep, I'm going to ruin Christmas for myself. And I really need some stuff. And not only that, I'm going to ruin it for my daughter, my sister, who's like right down the hall. And so all night long, I remember these Christmas Eves like they were yesterday, thinking, I'm never going to sleep. Oh, my God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my God, look at that. It's 4 o'clock. What is going on with me? Just relax, breathe, try to distract myself. I remember counting sheep, thinking, well, I've heard this works. And then the next thing you know, your parents walk through the door and say, okay, Chris, let's go see what Santa brought. I remember thinking, well, don't bother, because I didn't sleep at all. I'm sorry, I ruined for everybody. You walk in there and there are all your presents. So it was almost even more magical. Like, oh, my God, he came, and I was awake the whole night and never even heard him. And I bet if you talked to my parents, they would say, Chris, you were out cold in 20 minutes. But when we are anxious, when we are kind of stressed about things, even when we're stressed about the act of sleeping, it can start to make us misperceive lighter stages of sleep as being wakefulness. And this has been documented forever. It used to be called twilight sleep, which I think is a real Canterbury Tales-like title for that. But then they changed it to sleep state misperception. And nowadays we call it paradoxical insomnia. An individual who, you know, is sleeping numbers that don't make any sense. And then, like you said, when you see these people, you look and think, my God, you look great. Like, if that's what you look like sleeping 30 minutes a night, I can't imagine what you're. And that's where you start getting into the idea. And one of the things I talk to my patients about is, look, it's, you know, it's 9 o'clock. If I told you I had a meeting and I wasn't going to be back here until around 4, just stare at the ceiling while I'm gone. My guess is you're not going to do that. My guess is after about 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to say, ah, to hell with this doctor. It's not worth me sitting here just looking at the ceiling. I'm going to leave. Yet people describe doing similar acts all the time. And they'll tell me, people, I go to bed at 10 o'clock. It takes me till 5 o'clock to fall asleep. Well, what do you do for 7 hours? Oh, I just sit there, look at the clock. I'm frustrated about my partner. They can fall asleep right away. And you think, for 7 hours? Is that really logically make sense that you're sitting there doing nothing for 7 hours? And when you get an insightful person, they'll tell you. In fact, I had a woman yesterday said, I don't feel like I sleep at all, but logic tells me that I do, as well as my partner. You know, my partner will say, when I get up and have my Cheerios in the morning, I didn't sleep at all last night. My partner will say, what are you talking about? Every time I went to the bathroom last night, you were snoring. So you can sometimes see hints of that, but some people just don't pick up on it.
It's really an interesting phenomenon. I'm just wondering, be it during the night or during nap time, can rest be as beneficial as sleep? Or maybe if you tell us about the cycles of sleep and the function and importance of each, maybe that would answer the question.
No, I think your question is really good. And it's really important for a couple reasons. One, because it's scientifically accurate and rigorous, meaning that Can resting do all of the things sleep does? No, it can't. Can it do a lot of the things that sleep does? Absolutely. Wow. So, there's sort of the magazine kind of tips we get for sleep. You know, there's a whole industry, books, magazines, you know, sound bites that kind of built upon. Well, if you're in bed for 10 minutes and you're not falling asleep, you should get out of bed and do something else. The bed is for sleep and sex only. All these little, which are great. They're great sort of guidelines. But to me, if somebody says, look, I got in bed last night at 10 o'clock and it takes me, you know, an hour, hour and a half sometimes to fall asleep, I don't really care. I don't mind lying in bed with my eyes closed in the dark thinking about my celebrity crush. Mm-hmm. I don't want that person getting out of bed, because that rest they're getting is really helpful. I mean, some studies, cognitively, it's very difficult to determine whether somebody's rested or actually slept. And from a physical standpoint, if you effectively rest, and effectively resting means you're lying in bed in the dark, cool environment with your eyes closed, you're not looking at the clock every 7 seconds trying to figure out if you're asleep yet or not, you're not panicked, then that can be almost, you know, 70% effective in terms of restoring our body. So no, it's not perfect, but most people could operate pretty decently the next day on 70% of what they would have been had they slept, and most likely are going to sleep pretty well the next night having had that kind of difficult night. So if I can convince patients or the athletes I work with that, look, here's what you can control. You can control your bed, your bedroom environment, and your schedule. So I want you to go to bed on time. I want you to get out of bed when I tell you to get out of bed. But in between there, if you're not sleeping, that's fine. Just relax. I mean, hey, it's nice. It's dark. You don't have kids that are breaking things and losing lunchboxes and forgetting their jackets at school and their homework is getting washed in the washer. You don't have a boss that's yelling at you. You don't have to pay taxes when you're lying there in the dark. All those things you ran through, we're pretty free of. So, I mean, I've found that I've changed my own attitude about resting, and that I really enjoy it. I find it to be a really nice thing. And not a hellish thing, like one patient told me, you know, how's your sleep? Well, it's hellish, Dr. Winter. Well, what's hellish about it? Well, I get in bed, and it sometimes takes me an hour, maybe even longer, to fall asleep. And to me, when I think about hellish, I think about standing in a park with my kids, and somebody drives up behind me in a van and grabs me, and next thing I feel a sting in my neck, and the next thing I know, I've awakened in somebody's basement, chained to the wall.
Oh my, what an imagination. Oh.
Well, I'm saying, like, hellish is such a strong word. Like, okay, that is a hellish situation. Lying in your bed in the dark, just kind of relaxed there, to me is pretty far from hellish, yet we make it to be. In fact, there's a great quotation in Arianna Huffington's book, that's sort of a proverb, and it basically says, you know, when we are asleep and stressed about all the terrible things that are happening, when in reality we're just lying there in the dark. It's something, I'm butchering it terribly, but it's such a great quotation, and that people get so worked up about their sleep and all the terrible things are going to happen, when in fact, you're just lying there in bed in the dark. It's okay. It's going to be just fine.
We're speaking with Dr. W. Chris Winter. He's a neurologist and a nationally recognized sleep medicine specialist. The name of his book is The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. Do you think technology has made our sleep worse? Because it seems like everybody has their electronic device by their bed, either their iPad or their iPhone or...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, obviously, I'm, you know, maybe the NPR station that was interviewing sleep doctors when the light bulb was invented would say, oh my God, this terrible thing, the light bulb. Everybody's up now at night. And, you can imagine that. That'd be a fun conversation to recreate.
Right.
I do think this is, you know, outside of that big jump, when we suddenly stopped having to rely on, you know, very faint little lights and candles and whatnot. We really went to this sort of 24 hours. I think this is really taking it to another level, not only in terms of, you know, the light character, the proximity of the light to our face, but just the addictiveness of the light. Like I don't find myself addicted to looking at an incandescent light bulb. It's nice that I can turn it on and get some things done in the evening and clean up the kitchen, but I don't find I'm terribly addicted to it. In fact, once I get out and go camping, I don't really want to be around light. I can't say the same thing for my cell phone. Like when I'm sitting around the lake in my tent, I do have an urge of, ooh, I wonder if somebody's emailed me about something, or wonder if my agent's trying to get in touch with me, or any issues with my patients, or, you know. So to me, this has really taken it to a new level. And as somebody who did not grow up with this technology, I think I'm better equipped to put it in its place potentially. When I look at children, not only children who come here as patients, but also my own children, it is a tough fight. I mean, I remember talking to a professional football player during a training camp, and he told me, when I was talking to him about his sleep, he said, well, because I don't think we need to worry too much about my sleep, because I don't think I'm going to make this team. I said, well, God, don't think like that. I mean, you look like you're a good football player. He said, yeah. He goes, I don't think I'm going to make the team because I'm addicted to my cell phone. It was a really interesting thing to say to somebody he'd only known for about 20 minutes. And he said, I get home and I put it in a drawer, and then the next thing I know, it's in my hand. So if we could just get people to turn their phones off an hour before they went to bed and put it charging somewhere other than their bedroom, we'd be in a lot better shape than we're in right now. And I love when my patients tell me, well, you know, I would do that, Dr. Winter, but it's my alarm clock. And I'm always sort of, you know, we had alarm clocks before the clock feature app on your phone, right? They were really cool ones. They had little bells on, a little clicker would go back and forth and ring and wake you up. You know, so, you know, I think that there's a lot of excuses. I mean, I know people have gotten rid of landlines now. And so there are obstacles. But, yeah, I think technology right now is just, you know, having as somebody who's watched Breaking Bad, dear God, if that's not considered a class 3 drug, I don't know what is. I mean, how many times? Just one more episode. I'll get 2 hours of sleep and I'll be OK for my patients the next day. Like, damn you, Bryan Cranston. Damn yeah, right. You.
Doctor, how about white noise and soothing sound generators? I have one sometimes I go to sleep to. It's a thunderstorm in the Everglades.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think generally speaking, our brains sleep best in silence. I think there are occasions where we can't get silence because a partner's snoring or a neighbor is noisy or a dog is making weird noises that sleeps at the foot of your bed. So to me, if you're going to, you know, if you can't achieve that, I think a white noise is fine. You know, the considerations I always have about white noise are, you know, can you hear the loop? I've had white noise machines that have thunderstorms. After a few days of it, I start to pick up on the pattern of, okay, there, and there's the sound of that thing and that, and then we start all over again. So then my brain starts to kind of clue in to like the squirrel sounds, the Woodland Creatures app sound, and you know the squirrel makes that funny little sound every, you know, 17 seconds because it's on a loop. So I think they're really good ones. You can't really pick up on that. And I think as long as it's sort of a white noise, rainstorm, you know, ocean kind of sound, it's probably good. You know, they've done studies where you can't really learn Spanish in your sleep at night. But if you look at somebody's brain functioning during the night and you give it sounds, and the study that I found really interesting was when they were playing sounds like words for people, and they would divide the words up into two groups, either verbs or colors. And as they played those sounds for people who were sleeping inside these brain scanners, you could see the individual's brains were sorting the words. So the idea that you can have your episode of Friends playing on Netflix on your laptop right next to your head, and people tell me all the time, oh, I just like it. It kind of helps me get to sleep and helps me sleep a little bit better. It's not. You know, Rachel and Ross fighting, breaking up, getting back together again, fighting. It's not good for your sleep. So if you like to watch that kind of thing, which is great, just make sure it's set to a timer so that, you know, after a short period of time, the light from the screen and the sound from the episode is not in your bedroom during the night.
How long does it take? Let's say you tell somebody, okay, in order to get a better night's sleep, someone with a sleep disorder, let's say, and you give them instructions on what to change or when to go to sleep or when to get up. And, of course, you advocate doing it exactly at the same time every day, which you say is so important, the consistency. But how long does it take the brain to adapt to a new sleep pattern?
Sure. So, generally speaking, it depends on what that pattern was to begin with. I mean, if you're awfully close to a routine schedule, it shouldn't take that long. If you're a shift worker who is working 7A to 7P, they work for a week or two, then they're off for a couple of days, and they go back 7P, 7A, you know, ER nurses, just nurses in general. Good God, their schedules give me headaches. They, you know, well, tell me about your sleep. And like 20 minutes later, in one PowerPoint presentation down, they're still trying to explain to me how their schedule works, and it's baffling. So to me, you know, our brains generally, if we're traveling, will adjust for each time zone we travel. It takes about a day. So if we, you know, go from here to, you know, Alabama, that's one time zone west, it's going to take us about 24 hours to adapt. If we're going from a night schedule to a day schedule, I mean, that means it could take, you know, on order of 12 days to adjust. And that's the average person. There's some people, particularly if you're real morning oriented, it can be even longer. And by the time you're getting ready to adjust, you might be changing your schedule again. So it's really dependent. It's dependent upon the kind of chronotype we have. Are we night people? Are we morning people? These are sort of genetic tendencies we all share. Are we older or younger? As we get older, we tend to adapt to our schedules a little bit slower, which is why it's really interesting to see a 20-year-old baseball player travel across the country during a season and then talk to his coach. I mean, the coaches really struggle sometimes as they get older just to kind of bounce back from these big shifts in their travel. So it varies. There are things that individuals can do to make that transition faster, you know, light exposure, trying to adjust meal timings properly, fixing your exercise. There are even medications that can help people do these things a little bit faster. And that's why it's frustrating when the dialogue in the media is about sleep. Well, tell us about sleep disorders and how can we get them fixed? And they're just so unbelievably varied. And there's certainly disorders we can fix ourselves, but I often feel like the media kind of portrays this message that, you know, 90% of sleep problems are within our realm to fix just by eating, you know, Brussels sprouts and hummus at night and making sure we have plenty of light in the morning and dark shades in our bedrooms. And that can certainly help some people, but for the people who really struggle with intrinsic sleep problems, they're not going to find their solutions that easily in a book.
You mentioned
mine included.
You mentioned medications. What are your views on medications? Because I had heard that they alter our sleep cycles and therefore disturb the sleep we do get, that we don't get the cycles that we're supposed to get with medication.
Yeah, again, that's such a great question, and that's generally how it's phrased. You know, Dr., when we think about medications, well, I think if you're a 21-year-old college student who made straight A's all through high school, and now as you've gotten into college, your grades have kind of progressively declined because it's hard for you to stay awake in class. You skip social events so you can sleep. Doctors have diagnosed you with depression for the last several years of your life. You don't feel that depressed. You just feel tired all the time. You finally get an accurate diagnosis that you have narcolepsy. I think medications are incredible for that person, will be life-changing. So there's a sleep disorder that I think, one of my best days as a doctor is looking at a narcolepsy patient who's well-treated and the incredible change it makes in that person's life. So there's a great example of medication helping, or somebody has really significant restless leg syndrome, which sounds like a silly diagnosis, but medications in those people can be life-changing. Do I think positively about a medication using to knock yourself out at night? Not really.
Well, on that
and you're
note.
Right. And they often, these drugs we're taking for quote-unquote sleep, they're not improving sleep. They may actually be worsening it. And there's never been a sleep aid. So whatever your listeners are taking, there's never been a sleep aid. It's really been shown to improve performance. And that's
Dr.
always
Winter.
The final argument.
Dr. Winter, your theme song is on.
Oh, gosh, I'm getting sleepy.
Yeah, I'm sorry we have to go. We heard you had to go, so that's why. Dr. W. Chris Winter is a neurologist, nationally recognized sleep medicine specialist. He's president of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine, Sleep Medicine, and he consults with a lot of professional sports organizations and the U.S. military. So, thank you so much. Wish we had longer.
Say goodnight,
thank
Bonnie.
You.
Good
thank
night.
You.
Good night, Dr. Winter.
Good night. Sleep tight.
You too.
We'll be back with more.